All right, you guys, we're going to get started. Steve, shut the door, she dare you.
Okay. Open with the Serenity Prayer. Hi, I'm Kim, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Kim.
I'm getting there. Open with the Serenity Prayer. Let's start there. God.
God. Grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Okay. I got to read a bunch of stuff. First one is a press media announcement. As our 11th tradition says, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. The primary purpose of our public relations effort is to tell the story of Narcotics Anonymous and what our program offers to the still-suffering addict. Members of the press are sometimes attracted to our convention, and we welcome their interest. However, we do not disclose our last names in the media as identifiable members of Narcotics Anonymous. If a member of the press approaches you, please direct them to the chair or the vice chair of the convention. Statement to the media. If any members of the media are present, we ask you to contact the chair or vice chair for any information. Social media statement. The widespread use of social media networking and social media by our fellowship indicates these forums are resources that can serve to facilitate greater communication and interaction among Narcotics Anonymous members. With that being said, some of our members may not want to be depicted in photos or on social media platforms. Please be mindful of this and get permission from members if you intend to post photos or put them in a photo or any type of thing like that social media-wise. Clarity statement. At any meetings, we introduce ourselves as addicts. When members introduce themselves as addicts and alcoholics, or talk about living clean and sober, the clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests that there are two diseases, that somehow one drug is separate from the rest, requiring special recognition. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive, and in reference to the disease of addiction, allowing us to focus on our similarities and not our differences. May I please have who is an addict?
Addict called Dad.
Hi, Dad.
Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We have our whole life been thinking we're centered in drugs in one form or another, beginning and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or a woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same, jails, institutions, and death.
Thanks, Deb. How about why are we here?
I had to call Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we got it for us. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we're actually creating our own problems. We seem to be incapable of making life on its own terms. Most of us realize that in our addiction, we're slowly committing suicide, but addiction is such a cutting edge of life that we've lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us end up in jail, sought help from the medicine, religion, psychiatry. None of these methods are sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaces, continues to progress, until in desperation we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realize we are sick people. We suffer from a disease from which there is an unknown cure. They can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is then possible.
Thank you. All right. Now it's time to introduce the speakers. Well, I'm going to introduce the first speaker. We're going to have one of two speakers. The first one is J.L., and his home group is the Man Up Group in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. Would that be considered Greensburg? Yep. And he happens to be my husband, so I'll be on him with the 5 and 1 minute flags. Nothing else I need to take.
Take my water, too.
Oh, God.
She gets half everything. She wants it all. Hi, everybody. I'm Jay, and I'm an addict.
Hey.
first, I want to thank the committee and everybody that's involved with the East Coast Convention. You know, this means a lot to me. I've been a coordinator for the Westmoreland County Jail for the last year, and then countless years of taking the meeting into the prison. So, you know, I know how what it's like to need books in there, and I'm hoping that we do good this year and get a lot of books out, because them guys are in there and they got nothing to do. So. Anyway, you know, this is great. Obviously, the big elephant in the room is why am I in a wheelchair? You know, it's when Bob asked me, it was like 2 months ago, and I wasn't in a wheelchair. I was healthy and running around, going to, you know, riding my motorcycle, my Harley, you know, going to tons of meetings, you know, and everything was good, you know. And 50 days ago, a kid, stupid kid, pulling out of a dispensary, get this, on 420, you know, weed day, pulls out and I run into him. You know, I'll get into that, but it's just amazing. My topic is acceptance is the key. And, boy, well, I got a big pill to swallow here for this one. But, you know, it's funny that the support I get from NA over this thing is just over the roof. It's funny that one of the guys I sponsor, he texts me, he says, break a leg. I says, well, it's too late. You know, I've already done that, you know, because I broke my leg, shattered my pelvis, broke my back, and, you know, through the grace of God and mercy, you know, I'm here. You know, I didn't die. I didn't have a helmet on. I hit head first. I got a video of it. I'm trying to do a lawyer. He pulled all these videos. And my wife wasn't on the back. You know, there's another thing. It's like, so I am extremely grateful for this program and just the everybody in it. You know, rewind, just before this, you know, I've been working on a good program. Bittersweet is this week is it would have been my for me to pick up 34 years. My first clean date was June 6, 1989, and I stayed clean for 22 years, and I picked up, and it took me 8 years to get back. I'm back for a little over 4.5 years, under 4.5 years. You know, that is through the grace of God and the mercy of this program. What it did for me is it sparked me. You know, I've been going to 10, 11 meetings. See, I love my motorcycle. My bike, I would get on in the morning. I'm semi-retired, carpenter 50 years. So, you know, I'm able to do things that, you know, a lot of people would have to work. I worked all my life and to get into this position, to be able to go to meetings, two meetings a day. I would go jump on my bike and go to a meeting here, jump on my bike, go to there. And in fact, I had been gone to a meeting that day at Paul's Home Group, met another guy from the program. We were riding around, and I was going to another meeting in McKeesport when this happened. And it's funny, I really know that I'm an addict. Because when this happened, this kid pulls out on me and hit me, and I, you know, I went flying through the air, and it took him a half an hour for the ambulance to come, and I'm laying there. I was in my, you know, if you envision your pelvis is like a pretzel, and if you break it all breaks, and it was almost dislocated from my spine. And then my legs broke and everything else is busted up. So I'm in excruciating pain. And I didn't pass out. And I'm looking to try and see what my bike's doing, you know. How bad's my bike, you know. And they kept pushing my head down. I'm like, what, you know, where's my bike? And, you know, and I got some glimpses of it. And it was crazy. They got me into the ambulance finally. And then they get me in there and they're talking. They're like, hey, we know you're in pain. We're going to hit you with 100 milligrams of fentanyl. I just tell you, they hit me with that, and I just went, oh, what bike? What kid? What problem? What thing? It only lasted for 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes maybe. Took a little pain. But that's the feeling I chased as an addict all my life, from the first time I used when I was 12 years old. till now. You know, it was just like, that's what I live for as an addict. And problem is, you know, when I use till I'm homeless. And it's exactly what happened.
Yep.
When I picked up, you know, we lost a home. I must lost my marriage and my relapse. Lost everything, you know, repossessed cars, the whole nine yards, repossessed properties. You know, this disease does not discriminate, nor does it care what you had before or what you had now, because it'll take it. And it took everything, my spirituality, took my, you know, integrity, all that stuff. My mom was sick and I didn't see her for years. I got clean on her birthday, and she passed 3 years ago. And my stepdad just passed. So, you know, I'm grateful I've been able to be there for them when that happened. But, you know, I wanted to say, before this, I've worked the steps diligently. I work them out of the step working guide. We do a step and a tradition. And, you know, I had been doing it, and I had just got on to my 11th step. And, you know, I'd been doing a 10th step, taking inventories. I was real right with God and everything, and it talks about, you know, you hear people saying about being in position. And I was in position for this to happen for me. That was what was so amazing, you know. I didn't, you know, I knew the spiritual principles of faith, courage, you know, acceptance, all that stuff. I got it. You know, I accepted where I was at. Okay, I'm going to go through this. I'm going to go through some pain. I'm going to go through some struggles. You know, and my family, my wife is going through some stuff too. It's like, this is a family thing, just like our disease is. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but the way that people showed up, and I had like 5 meetings last week. They brought them to the nursing home. I had, it was funny, because I tell them it's a church group. You know, cause I don't want to offend them, but everybody knows it's a motorcycle. That I had like 12 people stand there thinking, I heard it, like, what is this, a motorcycle gang? Are they going to, they plotting a run or something? You know, what are they going to do? It's like, because it's funny how when in Narcotics Anonymous, we learn how to cultivate and have relationships. That's what this is all about. This for me it is. And you know, being in there, I've been in there for 45 days, 51 days it's been since the accident, but I spent a week in ICU, Forbes Regional, great hospital. If anybody wrecks and tell them take you to Forbes Regional, I recommend ICU there highly. It was a good place to almost die. So, you know, I got a couple surgeries, and then finally they got me to this place. But it's like, it's funny, I'm running around there. That took me a couple of weeks. I was real miserable. I'm this food sucks. The coffee's burnt, and I'm used to bad coffee. You know, needing coffee. I mean, you can't get any worse than meeting coffee. But these people were messing it up bad. So I was like, what the hell? So, but then after it calmed down, they let me pick my menus, and I got chummy with a cook, and I was getting, instead of powdered eggs, they were giving me real eggs. I was like, yeah, you know. So, but you know, they sent me a card this morning. I got a card from the cooks. You know, like, it, you know, it's a kick-ass, you know, card. You know, you're doing this. It's an encouragement. But it's like being able to form relationships and talk to people. And that is what's so powerful in here, and that's what I do in here. And I, like I said, I have people coming. So many people on social media have reached out. People have texted me, called me. What can I do for you? Helping my wife and helping me at home. And you know, I had someone come and build me a ramp for my house. It was like people in NA show up. You know, all you got to do is get here. Once you get here, stay here. You know, that's the big thing. So, I've learned that wholeheartedly. I was supposed to, I had a doctor's appointment Wednesday, and I was supposed to go home, man. I was all revved up. It's like, yeah, let's do this. It's like, I'm gonna go home. I was running around the nursing home, saying goodbye and thanking everybody for all this. And next thing you know, they did the x-rays, and it says, you know, your pelvis is separated. If you do this, any if you mess this up, we're going to have to go in for surgery. The good news is we don't have to go in for surgery. The bad news is we don't want you to bear any weight. You can't stand up. If you stand up on it, it's going to cause you some to have to go in, get another surgery, and do this all over again. So, you know, that was a hard pill to swallow. I mean, I was ready to go home, sleep in my own bed, you know, spend some time with my wife, you know, everything, you know. Now I got to look for a conjugal, I guess. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how that's going to work, but it's crazy. And the crazy thing about it is, like, when you hit something, I mean, I hit a car. When this happened, I hit a car going 40 mile an hour, and it smashed everything, man. I mean, I was like, not to get you, everything was black and blue and swelled, and it's still everything's messed up. And I'm like, you know, wow, you know, my thing's all brown. Not to be thing, my wife is a diamond of brown. What am I gonna do? You know, so it's like crazy that I have to accept a lot of things. My wife has to accept a lot of things. Everything's that's gonna be all right, and I have to have courage. I have to have faith. I have to have honesty. You know, with all these things, there's some pain meds involved in this, and that's a struggle. You know, I have to deal with this. It's real. Like my buddy Phil says, you know, if I'm a drunk and I go to the hospital, they aren't going to give me any two shots of whiskey to fix it. But I'm a drug addict, they're going to give me narcotics, and I like narcotics. So, you know, and our bodies don't know the difference between a drug that was given for pain or us taking them for recreation. So, you know, there's a struggle there that I have to deal with, and, you know, but I'm up for it. You know, my head is right. I'm in position to do whatever it takes. You know, I didn't, in my last, before I got my relapse, I wasn't in that no matter what. I was solving my own problems. I wasn't connected. I wasn't helping anybody. I was into golf. You know, my golf was what I talked about. It's what I did. You know, this time I go to meetings and I talk about the steps. I talk about your traditions. I ask people what's going on. I grab the newcomer, and I, you know, I want to know what's going on with you. I really do care, because I have a spot in my heart for people to relapse and come back, because I know what that's like. And construction workers. I worked construction all my life. That's another breed, man, because it was like, if you work like a man, you got to party like a man. So I understand that. You know, so it's like, my story today is that, you know, that there's faith. That I can have faith that anybody can come in here, you can go through some stuff, and you don't have to use. You don't have to go back to that stuff. You know, and we're going to have some trials. We're going to have all kind of things going to happen. You know, death of my mother, deaths of loved ones, all that stuff is all going to happen. And the older we get, the more. I just bought two Infinity coins, whatever they are, yeah. And one of them's for me. You know, it's like, hopefully I'm going to die clean. You know, that's my hope and my prayers. You know, but I just know that I've learned to take it one day at a time, and not to the acceptance for me is not trying to worry about what's happened tomorrow. Not trying to worry about everything, every little thing, because I have my own business, and I had to do everything. When you have that, you know, you got every detail has to be grinded. And when I do that, you know, I can't sleep at night. But I've learned that whenever I turn things over and I accept it and I surrender for things, then, you know, I got a better chance at having some peace of mind. And that's all I really want, you know. Not to use, have peace. Peace of mind is so precious. I mean, to be able to lay your head on the pillow and not worry about a million different things. Mm-hmm. To be able to, you know, just not, you know, knowing you're powerless. This is 100% powerless. You know, so I need to just know that. When I recognize that and I accept it, then I got a chance of not grinding on it. So, you know, Narcotics Anonymous has given to me much more than I can give to them. But, you know, today I just try and give back and hopefully I can get another day clean, and anybody coming in here can just, you know, relate maybe and know that we get a lot of chances here. I know I got a lot of chances. So I am grateful for that. You know, I heard my buddy say that, you know, once we get clean twice, it's like catching lightning in a bottle twice. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's some powerful stuff there. So I've probably been caught catching lightning in a bottle all my life. I dove on a rock in 75 and almost died there. Countless, like everybody else, countless, you know, car accidents and then this thing and overdoses. It's like, you know, I'm here to tell you that, you know, we can recover. All you got to do is, you know, keep coming back. I think I'm done. That's all I got.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Our next speaker is going to be someone I've also known for a very long time, Steve T.
My name is Steve, and I'm an addict. I know it's an honor to be asked to speak here, but I can't say I'm grateful or happy that anybody asked me. I'm going to be real honest about it. This is the last thing in the world that I would like to do. I would rather jump off the bridge. Maybe not jump off the bridge. It definitely isn't on my hip list. So I'm just going to, you know, real quick, you know, I asked my sponsor, I said, you know, there's only one thing I can say that I feel comfortable about speaking about, and that would be about relapsing, because that's my story. I said, I don't know what to say about acceptance. You know, I get scared about doing this. You know, I got an eighth grade education, and I'm not, you know, that well-spoken, and, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind is, like, you know, I'm just not good at this. But my sponsor told me one time, the most important thing to do, just go hit your knees before you speak and ask for the courage to be honest and do the best you can. And after that, it's out of your hands. So that's what I did. I went and hit my knees, said a little prayer. So I just come up here and I try to do the best I can. That's all I can do. And, you know, first time I ever came to a meeting, the summer of 1976, I went to St. John's Hospital. It was in the north side. And I went there because they gave me methadone. And, they didn't have an A there, but I still remember this day. It was an AA meeting, an H&I meeting, and the people were really nice. I still remember that. They were kind. And I also remember I saw some guy go through the DTs, and I haven't forgotten that. You know, it's like, wow, that's really bad. Maybe I better just stick with the narcotics. But I remember them being really nice, but I just remember I just wasn't ready. You know, as far as acceptance, I just had a long journey ahead of me, and I didn't realize it at that point. That was 1976, and I just floated around for a couple of years, you know, just doing different things, getting in some trouble. And somewhere right around 1978, I got in some trouble, and I went away for about 4.5 years. Mm-hmm. And when I got out, I ran into Tap when I got out. He had been, it was 1982, he was involved in the program, he was a good salesman, and he started telling me, you know, you have to go to Gateway, you have to go to Gateway. Well, he's a good salesman also, it wasn't like I had a lot going on. Like, it wasn't like, you know, I was doing anything. I was like, yeah, okay, I have nothing better to do. So I went to Gateway, and when I got to Gateway, it was like nice. You know, it was like they had really good food, there were girls, and it was like, this is not so bad. So I went there, and you're away for a while. Coffee in jail becomes a big thing. I like drinking coffee. And they were like, no caffeine, no nothing. And I was like, oh, this isn't good. So I met a girl there. She went to outside meetings. They would take people to outside meetings. And I asked her if she'd bring me a cup of coffee back. So next morning, I fell asleep. She goes, hey, I got that cup of coffee for you. And I was like, so happy. You know, I was like, wow, this is nice. So I wanted to like return the favor. I was always good. You know, I was never like a thug or, you know, an armed robber. But I was like a scammer. You know, and I was good like with doctors on the phone. And sometimes I'd go to different categories of BBB. So I figured, time there was a cop here called Tussinex. I figured, you know, return the favor, I'm calling a prescription, and there was a drugstore across the street from Gateway. I was in really good shape, so I was running every morning, and I figured, I'm just going to run across the street to the drugstore, you know, get the cough syrup and bring it back. And that's what I did, and we split it, not 50-50, but we split it. You know, one thing led to another. Next thing, you know, we got kicked out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was just a typical addict thing. We left together, we got kicked out together, and then we just stayed together. And then we just stayed together for like 2 years. She got pregnant. And then I went back to jail in 1984. And what happened was when I got out in 1986, I got out May 8th of 1986, I had no intentions of staying clean. You know, I had typical dope fiend success move. I was going to go get a prescription for Dilaudid, sell them, and get some money in my pocket. And it just, some reason, it just didn't quite work out like that. I ended up going to an NA meeting that night, and somewhere during the course of that meeting, I just kind of looked at my life, how things were going. And I was like, you know what, I think, like, this is okay. And I stayed clean for 12 and a half years. Mm-hmm. And for the first couple of years that I was clean, I see Kimmy sitting there, because my real good friend of mine, you know, we were all together. And it was nice. The program was real small, and I had a really nice 5 years. You know, I had never done anything in my life clean. You know, even before I started using drugs, I see Terry sitting there, and this was before drugs really were a part of my life. We were in reform school, and I don't know, 50 years ago, we rode up there today, so it's pretty cool. We ran away from reform school together, and, you know, so, and drugs weren't part of our life back then, but I'm just, you know, yeah, I'm just, there's some evidence that I was screwed up before I started taking drugs, and I stay clean. You know, a lot of things in my life changed, a lot of good things worked. Started making a couple bucks, bought a little house, you know. But when I had like maybe 5 or 6 years, and this wasn't something that happened like overnight, slowly, and my sponsor always says, drip by drip, the bucket either gets filled up or it gets empty. You know, for me, it started getting empty. You know, slowly I quit coming to meetings. It's like, you know, it was a slow process, but, you know, the less I came, the less I wanted to come. And what happened eventually, when I did come, I didn't feel like I belonged there. And that's a scary place to be. Not only did I feel like I didn't belong, I feel like I didn't need the program. And I said, you know, I'm doing really good at work. I got a lot of nice things going on, making a couple bucks. You know, what I didn't realize, anything that I had good that was going on was because I was clean, but I needed the program to stay clean. And when I think about acceptance, I just never accepted internally how I needed the program to guide my life. And what happened was, I had about 10 and a half years clean, maybe 11 years clean. I started getting a lot of pain in my tooth. Now, to this day, I don't know if I really had pain or I was imagining the pain or whatever. I thought I had pain, and I started going to the dentist, and I started getting pain pills. And you know, the dentist, I think, started wondering, like, why is this guy always coming, you know? But I went to this doctor, and I was getting some pain pills for my back. But I was taking them as prescribed. And I never took more than what I was, you know, supposed to. And I was seeing this therapist at the time. When I saw the therapist, I told him, you know, I knew it was concerning. And I told him what happened, you know, what was going on. And he said, Steve, if you're in pain, take the pain medication. And I was like, yes. Now, I know today, you know, that decision is a personal decision. I should never let somebody, I'm not blaming him, it was on me. I was just, you know, I wasn't talking to anybody else, and I just ran with it. One day I was sitting in McKee's Rocks, and I took 1.5 pills instead of one, and I knew I crossed the, you know, fine line. So what happened was, I went for a couple months just taking a couple pills at a time, and not doing any more than that. And there was part of me that thought maybe I was just cured. You know, I started thinking, hey, you know, if I'm taking like 3 or 4 pain pills a day, that's not so bad for somebody like me. You know, I'm not like shooting the wadas. I'm not like, you know, maybe I'm okay. Well, one day I ran into this kid. He had cancer. And he started telling me this. I said, look, we'll go to the doctor. I'll be your spokesman. We'll get some Dilaudids. You know, it's a true story. You know, we go. And all of a sudden, it was like in that movie, Chucky, you know, he goes, I'm back. You know? And, like, then there was no middle of the road. It was just like from there to there. So, you know, this was like the first year. And all of a sudden, I got some money put away. And all of a sudden, you know, I kept saying, like, when it gets to this figure, I'm going to quit. You know, and all of a sudden the figures keep changing. Then I start coming up with these plans for detoxing. I went out to California. There was a place out there, it's like a rapid detox. They put you in the hospital, you know, and they detox you, you stay in there. And you know, in my mind, I thought it was a really good idea. I figured, you know, I'll be clean, you know. Well, I was. They you know, you're detoxed, but the obsession to use is like a superpower. At least it was for me, you know. And, you know, yeah, I was detoxed, but I still wanted to get high. And the only thing I got out of that, I ended up in San Diego County Jail with a case. So, you know, some more things happened. I was watching TV one day, and I saw this thing. They had an ad on TV about this place in Oklahoma. And it was like 1-800, we can get you clean. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, I'm going to go to Oklahoma, you know. And I told my ex-wife, you know, I'm going to Oklahoma. She goes, for what? And I said, they got this. She goes, you've really lost your mind, you know. And I said, what are you talking about? And anyhow, that didn't work either. But long story short, you know, years go by. I'm losing everything. Then I lost everything. And, you know, then there was part of me that thought once everything was gone, maybe I'd be okay and I'd be clean again. But that's not the way it worked. I just kept going, you know. It was like I just couldn't. You know, I just kept fighting on. You know, it was like one of that Japanese soldiers who never surrendered after World War II. You know, I just wanted to keep going. And I was living with this girl, and about a month before I got clean, she left. She just, you know, she ended up going to rehab. And when she went to rehab, you know, it's kind of made me start realizing some stuff. And she went, and December 23rd, that's my clean date. I'm a vet. I went up to the VA hospital, and you know, it was like Roberta Duran. I just threw my hands up. I had no muscles. I just didn't have any more. I just had no fight left in me. And, you know, it's funny because last week, my home group, somebody brought up the topic of the importance of keep tags. And I said for me, because I was on methadone before I went to the VA, I just stayed up there and I came off the cold. And when I got out of the VA, the main thing I thought about was, am I ever going to feel good physically? Because there was part of me that never thought that I would feel okay. And that was a spooky feeling. You know, I was asking them, what do you think I'll feel good? They didn't want to use, but I just wanted to know when I'd feel good. And I know people used to say, you know, nobody dies from lack of sleep. Dr. Torsten used to say that in Gateway. But I can tell you, after you're not sleeping for about 15, 16 days, you feel like you want to die. You know, like you know, you can't get warm and, but what happened was, when I got my 30-day key tag, there was something like, I saw some light at the end of the tunnel. And it gave me a lot of hope, and I never forgot that. You know, I knew I had a fighting chance to keep staying here. So, you know, when I got that 30-day key tag, you know, I'm coming up on 16 and a half years. And, you know, those first couple of years, my whole life was a scorched earth policy. I destroyed everything. You know, I lost my driver's license for 12 years, and what I did for a living, you need a car to do it. You know, you can't just do it without a car. But somehow or another, I figured out, like, where I lived at, there was buses. When I went from my house, I said, you know what, I'll just get on the bus, put a contract in my back pocket, and I'll go to work, and I'll make it happen. You know, and that's what I did. And my sponsor would say, you know, I tell him, I said, I'm not driving, you know. I get my license back, I'm going to get it back the right way. And I saved some money. You know, I never got behind the wheel of a car. And eventually, you know, I got my license back. And I was really proud of that. You know, it was like, I got that driver. And I still look at my driver's license, and I was like, you know what, man, it's a privilege to have a driver's license, you know? And I just kept doing things, you know, putting one foot in front of the other, and, you know, trying to do the right thing. I had about 6 or 7 years, and maybe about 5 years, and my older brother, we found him dead out in a hotel in Las Vegas, and I can't say it was a surprise or a shock. It was kind of a surprise that he lived as long as he did. But what happened is when he died, I had no contact really with my family. And it was out in Las Vegas, that's where the body was at. And my family lived in Florida, so they brought him back here for the funeral. And that was the first time we all saw each other physically. And, you know, it was kind of like a good thing. It was like, you know, a silver lining in the cloud. Because my family got to see that I was doing okay. I wasn't a burden. You know, they were so used to everything with me. You know, is he going to pull some kind of maneuver off? Is he going to get into our accounts or something? Or, you know, just something. And it wasn't. I was an asset. I wasn't a liability. And, you know, it just became a journey. You know, they say in the literature about sometimes relapse. I'm not advocating relapsing for anybody, you know, but for me, the only way that I could accept the program the way I do today, the only way, is by what I went through. I would never appreciate staying clean if that didn't happen to me. For me, it was a miracle. You know, it's a miracle the life that I have today. I would never have that life if that didn't happen to me. It's my being, you know, knowing that. It's every day I know this is the most important thing in my life, and I accept that. I accept that my thinking sometimes is delusional. You know, it's just really like gone, you know, and that's okay, you know, but, you know, this is my roadmap, you know, like, as much as I didn't want to do this, I think to myself, it's like work. I've always had a really good work ethic. I don't think anybody's ever been around me, you know, would ever say I slacked off at work, you know, but once in a while, I take a day off. But what I found out is that when I do take a day off, it doesn't make any sense because I destroy myself for taking a day off. So it's easier going to work than taking a day off. You know? And that's the same with like doing this. It'd be easy to say no. You know, it'd be easy just to not show up. But the feelings, as much as I don't like doing it, is, you know, I feel a lot worse if I didn't do it. So I'm glad I did it. I think I'm done. Phil was my first sponsor, okay? We have a long history, and it's nice to see him sitting there. And Steve's my sponsor now.
All right.
Thank
you. Okay. I'm going to open up the floor for comments because we have a few minutes here. Can we have a few minutes?
Yeah, you could.
Anybody have a comment? Want to share?
Floor's open.
Oh, no, I think Bonnie.
Bonnie!
Hi, Bonnie.
It was really good here, both of you. You know, the pain and coming back. That's not my story. Relapse isn't in it. But one of the things that happens when people relapse, I go right to them and sit with them. You know, because that pain of coming back or what you lost. And, you know, this recovery is a gift. And, you know, the fact that you're here, you know, and you're sharing with us and you're in pain and that you live, you know, is a miracle. And same with you, Steve. It's like, yeah, I'm not one of those judgy people. You know, relapse, Greg P. used to say relapse is not a requirement for Narcotics Anonymous, but if you relapse, welcome back. You don't have to use again. And I'm glad that you guys are sharing that, you know, because it's important. People do relapse. And thank God you make it back, right? And tell us what it's like. Because it hasn't changed, has it? Out there. No. So it's that help shot for the newcomer and for us sitting here. Thank you both for sharing from your heart.
Acceptance is the key and the floor is open. Anybody wish to share?
I've never been this clean, so I never know what to next in my life, right? And I was a chronic relapse. I mean, I used Narcotics Anonymous to take breaks from my active addiction rather than get clean. I could get clean, no idea how to stay clean. And I just didn't want it, and I was like, okay, I'll do it. And it was interesting that when I got up here, I wanted to take one of the four meetings ago, and I was totally into acceptance because it's a big one for me. But the room was full and they wouldn't let me in. All of the other three of them get a seat, but I couldn't get in here. So I'm really glad I'm here. And the reason why is our program talks about a second admission and the first step. And I did research for the last 5 years trying to find out exactly what that meant. I got answers from about 72 different multiple years, more than a decade, and friends of mine, because of the 3 decades I've been here in and out and making friends, the ones that helped me stay clean today. And it took a while, but what I found out was that foundation that the literature comes from, and the men that worked on it, and women that worked on it, did a lot of literature back in the day. It kind of gave me some in-depth about it, and they helped me out. And what it came down to was that it was said by one of the people who were involved in the literature that the reason why the second mission is there. Is that so you would dig and find out. Of the 72 people, not one of them gave me the correct answer until they figured out the correct answer was. The correct answer was acceptance. Not powerlessness, not all of manageability, unmanageability, and all that. The reason why it was acceptance is that because you admit you're an addict, which is our first step, doesn't mean you're necessarily ready to accept it. And that was one of the more difficult things that I had to work on me was acceptance. And after finding out why that meant and putting those words into that, it goes back to the other program, is how far the literature does stem from. And they're the ones that said that they drive drunk in the other program. There's one that's admitted he's an alcoholic, but he has an acceptance. That's just how the literature reads. And I'm welcome. If anybody wants it, I'll let you know where it's at. But I'm so grateful today. And I don't have to be afraid anymore or run from anything anymore. And our literature helped me a great deal, especially with Step With Me. Grateful to be here with my grandfather, my great grandfather, and show thanks as well. So it's my first ECC, and so far so good. I'm just going to enjoy it, keep my mouth shut the rest of the weekend. Thank you.
My name is Patty, and I'm an addict.
Okay.
And I want to thank the speakers. Thank you for your message and the fact that relapse is part of your story and they come back. Not everybody has that choice or that option. Mm-hmm. And I just came from the 17th. Mm-hmm. And my brother, my dad, and my sister were there. My brother died from an overdose. He was 22. And because of the sheer unmanageability of the household I grew up in, he and I basically had to raise ourselves since we were 8 and 6. And when he died, I know it's wrong, and I learned that and accepted that through the steps. But, you know, I thought if I'd have done a better job, maybe he wouldn't have been dead. And so I haven't been there in years and years. Didn't want to go, and here I am right beside the phone place, you know? Mm-hmm. So I go to the office, and the place is huge. I get them broken out, and I'm walking around trying to find them. You know, they're all together, and I'm, like, looking at this map, and... and I'm getting upset because I can't find them, and then I did find them, and it's worse, you know? And all I could do is keep telling my brother I was sorry. And I don't know so much today that it's sorry I didn't do a good job, but I'm just sorry he didn't have a chance like we do.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I'm here today, and I keep coming back, and you know what? We don't use no matter what, and sometimes no matter what sucks,
mm-hmm.
you know? And sometimes it's good stuff, but I'm part of the No Matter What Club, and some people don't get that chance. And here I am, had a convention, I got the chance, I spent all week seeing friends from, you know, the first third of my life, and then, you know, seeing family members that, you know, it just broke me open, and I'm not sure what to do with it, and I wasn't going to say anything, but if you guys don't know where I'm at, I get to bury that shit, you know, and I'm tired of that, and to open myself up, if I open myself up and let this out, what's behind it? And so, you know what, yay me, I get a program, I'm clean today, and I'm surrounded with love, and thank you for letting me share.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. My riding buddy. Acceptance is the key. It's always the key. When I'm in acceptance, my life goes a whole lot smoother when I'm in color and I'm in different positions. And it's that I'm in that part of my life where it's 5 steps forward, and sometimes it's 10 steps back. 10 steps forward and 3 steps back, and it's that ebb and flow of life. Okay, this is how it is today, and I have to accept this. And some things are really hard to accept. I mean, I lost my son, so I can't.
Mm-hmm.
I buried my son. And there's days when that grabs me so hard I can't breathe, and there's days when it's like piece of piece. Struggled so hard, and it's that ebb and flow, and it's always that I'm admitting and accepting. Admitting is in my head, accepting is in my heart, and I live from my head and my heart, my head and my heart, and my heart, usually till it's so painful, like that guilt we're talking about, since I get grabbed, it's like that, and I've done so much work on it, and so much, like there was nothing else I could have done, because I did everything that I thought. Sometimes fate and reality are coming, and it's just how I observe. You know, I've been doing some work with my past relationship with my husband in Texas, and I was so angry and so resentful that it's just where I was. And it just was the process of, no, I have to let this go. And I know I have to find some peace, but 10 steps forward, 20 steps back. And I am finally, like, really getting some peace. Like, the person I'm really angry is myself, that I stayed somewhere that I really shouldn't have. And the forgiveness of oneself for what you do here, it's really the work that turns the light on. It's like, so I'm 10 steps forward, 5 steps back. I'm in that ebb and flow, and some days it's 1-4 crying, and some days I'm really happy and riding my bike and go, ah, you know, it's that's really okay. Like, that's for me is what recovery is, of being who I am at the moment, no matter what it is, how it is. Being honest with it and put the spiritual principles in it. I thought the people that sat with me in my pain, you know, in that pain, that's a serious pain. It's a pain. I still don't have the word for it. Now, how I know I'm getting better, because I had some tears. I saw it. So it's like there's some betterness with that. It's because of this. Even It just, I'm very grateful. Acceptance is the key to me, and I'm glad to be able to. Thanks.
Thanks for sharing.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Suman. I'm an addict.
Suman.
First of all, thank you to everyone who's put in the work to make this happen. Feeling grateful about it is a huge deal for me. Yeah. And I've been in the program for about a year and a half now, and I live in India, and I was in the United States for on a work trip, and a friend of mine from Florida said that this is a convention happening here, so I'm here. It's amazing that I don't know anybody over here. That's fantastic. You know, there's so much less that I have to worry about being judged.
Yeah.
And when I'm telling my story, it's new to everyone. Because my story's been the same for a long time now. I was married about 17 years, and about 2 years I've been living separately from my wife. And I haven't been able to accept, it's not that I want to be married to her, but I haven't been able to accept where I am at, that I haven't been able to give her the love, you know, that I haven't been able to give those feelings. It doesn't come. But having said that, I haven't been able to accept that if I'm not been able to give it to her, to let her go gracefully. And I've been selfish and self-consumed. And it's been like, where I've been like, okay, now I'm in a program, so I'm going to get restored to sanity in X number of years, if not now. You know, so by then, if I get restored to sanity, then maybe I'll develop those feelings. You know, so I'm not able to work from the present. But if she was to play wife for me, right now, I would say, no, hang on, listen, I'm not there yet. So just wait till I get there, if I get there. All coming from inacceptability to where you are, the fear fear of being alone, loneliness, immense amount of guilt because we've got kids, but again, I mean, as somebody just shared, I think I'm most angry with me because I didn't take the responsibility of accepting where I am and then working from there because of the decision being the perfect decision. I would rather not make a decision and just let it be and still get stuck into that same pattern. Not think about somebody else, but only me, and me. As if I know what I want. So that's where I am.
Thank you.
Bruce Attic.
Bruce.
Hey, everybody. So, great meeting. Thanks for the both speakers. Got me really thinking about acceptance. And that's what the Narcotics Anonymous does. As focuses back on me and what I can do better. And I guess my biggest acceptance when I was new was, you know, accepting that my way wasn't good. And how I got there was through a sponsor and step of me writing out my stories and my past. And understanding that, you know, I don't have all the answers. You know, and learning that I can't do this alone, but we can do it together. And, you know, step two for me was pretty powerful. So I talked about the group, the program, and the God of my understanding. And thank my first sponsor for taking me through that thoroughly to understand that I don't have to do this alone. You know, NA means to me I'm never alone. And this is where I get my strength. I was on the elevator coming up here, and somebody says in the elevator about, you know, coming up to get my medicine. And I totally relate to that. in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. This is where I get strength, hope, and courage and a different perspective on how I need to work the program. Because this is what saved my life. And I'm glad to be here, and I will continue to listen. Thanks for letting me.
I just wanted to throw in my addicts to share me a member of our home group. It's always been relapse. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, it's so amazing how we can be out there for years and it's that relapse that knocks out. It's a gift to be here. It's a gift if you make it back. And I know when I close the meeting, I was, saving for the one that will make it tonight. Not planning on going out. Brother died from this disease too. And I'm relapsing. I'm just closing with the greatest acceptance when I really think about it is the acceptance in this moment, right now. Because even when I was a kid, it was never enough. I wanted more. And it was before I ever touched any dope. I always wanted more. I don't care what I got. What's that over there? And the greatest acceptance is this moment, right now, in all its beauty, and it can't be reproduced. The programs I was talking about, when I wake up tomorrow, I got to do something else. Because yesterday's shit might not work today. You got to do some work, Mom. You want to make this one? You got to do some work. I can't use last year's stuff. I use some of it, but I got to do some work, too. I'm just grateful.
Thanks for
having
me.
Good night again, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Like all of us, I think we struggle off and on in the daily thing, and my ability to surrender more quickly has become. I just don't have that much tolerance for pain anymore. You come around for a while, and you get to taste a little bit of serenity on occasion, and for whatever period of time that is, or whatever, and then man. When the shit hits, it's just like, oh. And again, I was raised by a bunch of the old-timers. Honesty and acceptance is what I was taught the first step was about. And the honesty was that I could see my life was unmanageable. People put it the other way around. For me, I could see that unmanageability was honesty, but I couldn't accept that I was powerless. I wanted to keep trying to exert some force or some power or something over that. And I looked at my first sponsor and I said, this just doesn't kill me. And he looked at me the way those old guys look at you with that kind of blank stare and he said, well, you're just wasting some value to get high time then. Because life doesn't fucking feel good all the time. It's what you do with it is what makes the difference. And of course, my skin crawled and I would have climbed in a hole and cried. But I'm so grateful that he told me the truth. He loved me enough to tell me the truth. My current sponsor has reminded me over and over again, which means maybe I'm not learning as little as I should. Acceptance doesn't mean why. It just means that you have to accept what it is. Because he said, if you're denying it, you're not working on the right problem. You're working on the wrong angle. You're not working on what the true problem is. So I'm grateful. I have things in my life today I don't like. I still need to accept. Thanks.
Thanks.
My name's Jeff. I'm an addict.
Yeah.
I'd really like to think about the language in the Bible and mention it twice. What did we run for that? When I was 9 months clean, I'd seen 11 things. And still had me of examples of what happens when you don't do it. And when I think of acceptance, I think, can I accept it unconditionally? Mm-hmm. So what can I say? Oh, yeah, well, I'll accept it. Provided I get there. So, you know, if you'll do this, then I'll do that. Desperate to do anything to get a life that doesn't suck as bad as that suck. When we're at that desperation, that life is beautiful, like you said. Just about anything is preferable. And I use the analogy of saying, well, if you told me, put on some robes and go down to the airport and hand out flowers to me, and when you do this, you get a life that doesn't suck. I would be glad to do that. And then later, you know, you say, well, you know, I need volunteers to make coffee next week, and nobody's putting their hand up. And like, well, is there a condition on it? Am I something like going to put a condition on it? Say, well, I'm going to participate provided if somebody else makes a coffee. Or, you know, what happened to that desperation of doing anything? Did I lose sight? Spiritual awakening when you're up on the mountain of the Dalai Lama and everything, and you say, okay, I see the sky opening, but can you have that when you're in front of a bunch of bubbles in a little sink with a bunch of dirty dishes? Can you have that spiritual awakening? Or is there a condition on the moment in the water? My first foray into faith was doubt. I came in without much faith in anything. I was pretty sure this whole God idea was something, it was just something some people told other people to get over on it or something. And the first, before I had much faith, the first thing I had was doubt. That maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is something to it. Maybe what I believe isn't right. I'm not saying I'm sure that it isn't, but I'm just thinking that maybe there's a possibility that that's the case. And now what can I accept? Can I accept terms? What terms? What do I have to negotiate with? I want what this program has to offer. It's offered for freedom. It's offered me the ability to go through 24 hours without having an obsession or desire to leave. And I can remember when I first got here that it was like minute to minute. Now there was 1,000 times and I said, I'm going to call the government. No, I'm not going to call the government. You don't have to have that world on the inside of me. Can I accept this? I'd like to accept it a little deeper, a little stronger. I'd like to do it unconditionally. I'd like to love it. Acceptance is unconditional. I'm striving for it. I like what the gentleman said about the serenity. And the downside is that it's fleeting. It's here for a minute. Enjoy it while you've got it, you know, while you've got that inner peace. Because something's going to happen, and then you got to find out a spiritual awakening with the body of your wishes. What I've been shown is that it can be done. You know, that it's not impossible. Others are doing it and can't do it. And that I can capture that serenity, I can capture that aha moment, and live and enjoy life in reality as opposed to some made up thing in my head. And to me, that would be acceptance. I want to go beyond admission. Yes, I think you understand that. I don't have to negotiate about how long I'm going to have to do this, because I don't have to do this anymore. I have a choice and I want to do this. And it's just keep working, so I'm just going to do it. That's all I'm going to say.
guys. Oh, dang. Okay, wait. Third step statement. Take my will and my life, guide me in my recovery, show me in my life, show me how to live. They do that one first, and then, actually, no, they did. We do recover first. I did that backwards. Sorry, guys. I am Kim, and I'm still an addict. This is we do recover. When at the end of the road, they could have just had me close the prayer with that. I guess that's what they want. When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Or go on the best we can to the bitter ends, jail, substitution, death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous. Now we can circle up. Pray. Yeah, we can just pray. Want to just pray right here?
Yeah.
All right. That's good. We're all on that music. Okay, so let me do this one more time. Many of us have said,
"Take my will and my life, guide me in my recovery, and show me how to live."
God
grant me strength.